Who's not answering the question now? You didn't answer it either.
No. I kind of got there. So what excites me is the software. The hardware. Hey, this is Forrest with Concrete Conversations. Today I interviewed Chris Green from GSSI, and I am wearing a GSSI t-shirt. They sent it to me, so I wore it for our show. And great conversation with Chris Green. Chris is one of the nicest guys around and also happens to be a professional product developmentologist. If you don't know what that is, don't try looking it up. You'll never find it online. But Chris was a really interesting guy to talk to because we talked about ground penetrating radar. We talked about the color orange and how important that is in ground penetrating radar, or not important. You know, you have to listen to the episode to find out. We also talked about hardware or software. What's the most important? What's the thing that gets us out of bed in the morning? And you'll have to listen to the episode to find out. You'll love it. So we want to start the episode off with the most important questions, and then over through the episode, we're going to go on to like the least important. So first off, we want to talk about the logo of GSSI. How important is the color orange in GPR, like EMP propagation?
Yeah, it's so we've done a lot of research on this. We try to send out t-shirts to anyone that'll take them, put them on, see if they're recognized by anybody. That's a good one there, yeah. And yeah, that's a nice one. I appreciate that. We try to wear it when we can. Yeah, it's funny. The orange, I'm not exactly sure of the lore of where the orange came from, but it certainly has stuck. And anywhere you go, people will say, hey, there's that orange box. I know what's in the orange box. I know I can trust the box. So I wish I had the actual origin story for the orange box, but it certainly has become kind of our calling card, and we don't make anything that doesn't have orange on it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I have several GSSI antennas, and all of them have a strong Halloween theme to them, for sure.
Pumpkins.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. See, when anytime that we're decorating for Halloween, we have a strong GSSI theme around our front door. Just antennas hanging all over the place. It's great.
It's funny when you see the lineups, right? When you get in competitive situations, you find customers that don't even always know the names of the companies, but they know the colors, right? As they know this color, that color, that color. And you realize how strong of a branding element a color really is. So you end up finding small little places to put it all over the place so that people keep thinking, all right, orange, I know what orange is, what it means.
Marketing is a real thing. Jen on your team would be very happy to hear us say that. Marketing is real. So this actually accidentally brings us into something that I wanted to talk about a little bit. GSSI, when I think of GSSI, I think when most people think of GSSI, Geophysical Survey Systems Incorporated, we think of ground penetrating radar, right? We think of GPR. And rightly so, I think. I don't think that GSSI is producing any non-GPR related products today. If they are, I'm not aware of it. But I know that in the past you have dabbled in at least some other geophysical tools. I know you had the Profiler EMP400 that was that's a soil conductivity electromagnetic induction tool. But not something that you guys are carrying anymore. In the past, some other things. Can you speak to what's brought that focus into just GPR, and why that focus?
Yeah, it's a good question. This is something that GSSI is kind of a small to medium sized company still, right? And I think every company around this size struggles with exactly this question, right? All right, so we're really good at making something. Hey, what would happen if we made that and that and that? Because we know to our customers there's value in those things. It's something we look at every day. It's something that is part of our portfolio planning and our conversations, and it's certainly part of every customer conversation we have. Are the kinds of other things that make your life easier or better. And I think we've, just because something doesn't make it to market right away doesn't mean we're not working on it. So there's all sorts of things that as a company, our job is to make sure we're investigating how to do everything in every way. And it just so happens that GPR has been the primary focus for the past really 50 years, but certainly we'll cap it at 20 when it became a more of a commercial beyond the base foundation of geophysicists. At that point, it became more of a commercial venture towards commercial technology of utility location and concrete detection. And that really changed the company. And what we found was, that was before my time, but what the company found really was GPR is a wonderful tool that has unlimited applications. And we could spend our time focusing on products that are outside of GPR, or we could try to make sure that we're focused on all the different places that GPR can be useful and all the different applications that it can be addressed with GPR. And I think the good news is, and I think most people in the industry would say this, is, you know, we're just scratching the surface. The kind of stuff that comes across our desk, you know, the part of the value of being in the industry for so long and having kind of the reputation and the domain knowledge that we have is people find us. We don't always have to go to them. And sometimes it's a great fit and sometimes it's not. But that has given us the ability to look in places we never, ever would have thought about before. And once you start to do that, you can start to say, wow, this business really could go lots of different directions. So every day, every week, every month, certainly, you start thinking about, all right, do we spend our time? And again, doesn't mean we're not researching things or getting things close to the edge, but there's a difference between that and releasing a product and supporting it and getting it in the field and making sure it's part of your core competency and just sort of dabbling. And so I think really our job over the past 20 years is to make sure let's bring everything we can to the concrete industry. That's been a great end. And everything we can to the utility industry, that seems to have gone pretty well. We're doing it in pavement. That's going quite well. And we just continue to look for these applications. And that's really what we've seen with GPR is there's just unlimited applications. And it's really exciting for the number of requests and people and business opportunities that come across our desk every day. It's great. It's the best part of working in a place like this, honestly.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. And, you know, as a so I'm a small business owner with a much smaller business than GSSI's employee count, but I'm still thinking about the same problems of, having a few customers who are asking for things that are a little bit off the wall that require a little bit of a specialty service or some different odd thing. And you just start wondering like, man, maybe I should start carrying that service. This is the second guy in as many months who's asked for this thing. I know I could have charged X number of dollars for that. Maybe I should learn how to do this thing. Maybe I should start carrying that service. Maybe I should buy that product to be able to offer this deliverable. And, it's that question of, are you spending dollars to chase after pennies? Sometimes you are, and sometimes you aren't. And, actually, I'd love to hear if there's some magical formula that GSSI has figured out for how to determine that, because as a small business owner, I don't really understand that until usually after the fact, until after I've spent $10 to make 3 cents. And that has happened.
Yeah, I think if you look across, the reason that there's Harvard Business Cases is because every company in the world has made that mistake, right? So I wish I could tell you that we've got some special sauce. That's right. Yeah. I mean, the world is sort of full of product managers trying to decide what it is that the world needs. And there's certainly not a formula, but there is, there are things you can try to do. It's complex, right? So you see companies do a couple different things. The most common thing that most companies do is they just copy. Right. So someone has proven a market, has proven a product, has proven a service, and then someone comes along and decides, wow, they're making a lot of money. I need some of that money, and I'm going to make exactly what they make and make it just either a little bit better, a little bit cheaper, a little bit whatever it is. And we've all seen that. We've seen it across the world. We've seen it in car companies. We see it in technology every day. GPR is certainly the same thing, right? Concrete scanners that we or others made early, there was only one or two. Now there's many. The utility scanner, even more. Right, you come out with a utility scan system that's unique and it's interesting, and then everyone sort of says, wow, that's pretty cool. And that's good for the consumer, right? Because they have more options and it's more price competition and they tend to get better solutions if there's competition, all good. But as a company now, you're at this situation where you have to decide, all right, am I going to do the same thing? Am I going to follow just so I can keep up? But even that is hard. Making a product that somebody wants, that someone is willing to spend money on is hard, that they know they want. They know they want it. It's still hard to make a good one. Trying to make a product that they don't yet know that they want, that's really hard, right? And I think as GSSI, that's what we're trying to do, right? We consider ourselves a market leader, not because we're trying to be arrogant. It's just where we want to be in the marketplace. Because we want to be making new things, exciting things, things that make people's lives easier. So to make those products takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of investment. It takes a lot of risk. Sometimes they hit. Sometimes they don't. And this is true for every company I've ever worked for. No different here. This is kind of worldwide when you're in product development. But you have to do a lot of research. You have to be very close to your customers. You have to really listen. You have to try to take egos out of the situation, right? Out of the room when you're making decisions, which is always hard because I've never met a person in product development that didn't think they knew what the right answer was, right? Everyone thinks they know what the right answer, what the right answer is for a product, whether it's a customer or a peer or someone else in the business. So it takes an awful lot of listening and it takes some risk if you're trying to make something that's different. And that's where we want to be. That's where we want to be as a company, is we don't want to be copying. If people are going to copy us, fine. We're flattered. It happens all the time. But that's not the space that we want to live in. And we spend an awful lot of time and effort trying to make sure we can make something that no one has that solves real problems. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's kind of how we try to do it.
Yeah, no, a lot of what I wanted to talk with you about, Chris, is this whole process of from conception to putting it on the shelf for sale, this product development and kind of what that's like. You're in this interesting space where you're a technology company and you sell your technology to both scientists and construction guys, and am I correct to assume that the vast majority of your clientele would fall into one of those two categories of either scientist or someone in the AEC industry?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. So the geo and geophysical is our history, right? So it's the geophysicists of the world, the scientists, professors. A really important part of our business, our history, people that mean a lot to us and we mean a lot to them. Our equipment, as you know, has been on Everest and every climate of the world. And that we take a lot of pride in that. And that's our history. And that's kind of where we grew up. And seismics before that, you know, a lot of influence in how we made products. And then, so that's kind of one category. And again, as you mentioned, the more of the concrete and utility guy at that point. Started to grow. Those businesses really started to grow. And service providers for those businesses really changed the landscape, right? As we started selling to service providers that were selling a service, as you know, rather than a geophysicist who is buying the equipment for their own research, their own daily use. And that really changes how you design a product and how you make a product. And if you think about the geophysicist and the kinds of things that they want, it's very, very different than someone who's using a Mini XT or a Flex NX who wants a very simple UI and just wants an answer rather than a data set. So we definitely have customers that land in those two big buckets with some around the fringe, but that's where we spend most of our time thinking about it, are those two groups for sure.
And, you know, those groups would have very, very different expectations because of their the disparity in their training there. I mean, you know, in the scientist column, the geo column, you'd have people who are spending years getting trained and presumably years even working with your equipment through college and through their higher education studies. And you're going to contrast that with a guy who's been training for weeks or months, maybe, on how to perform this service. And that would be quite the product development nightmare. Is how to create a product that's going to be as useful for the one end as it is for the other end of the spectrum. That is surely very difficult.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a trap, honestly. One of the main things that we do in every product development effort is we try to set up user personas. This is nothing about GPR. This is just what people do in product development generally. You try to set up user persona. So for a specific product, if you're trying to address a certain segment of the market, you need to know who the users are. And one of the most dangerous things is to try to put too many users, disparate, different users in that target goal, right? So if you're trying to say, I want to go after grad students that are working in the mines in South America, and then I also want to sell the same product to someone that's using it for concrete coring, who's going to use it once a week or a couple times a week. Trying to design a product is one thing. There's the whole user experience and how they hold it and how they use it, the kind of information they need and when they need it and what they do with the data. But it goes beyond that. It goes, how do you market it? Those two people do not respond to the same marketing, right? There's a reason that we have different trade shows, right? They're different users. So product development is just one very small piece of that puzzle. How you market it, how you sell it. Your sales team may not have the contacts in one market or the other. Now, we're fortunate enough to have a really wide variety of people that do marketing and sales and product development here, so we can address these. But it can be a very dangerous game for companies to try to really address too many users with any one product. Because what ends up happening oftentimes is you end up fighting one for the other or both for the other. They both get the lowest common denominator instead of having something that is purpose-built for each one. And that is always a wrestling match because there's only so many resources in the engineering team. So it's not like we can, just pump out 10 products a year. So you got to decide who you're going to go after, what you're going to make. It's easy to make mistakes. It really is. So user personas, target end users, that stuff really drives the user interfaces, the whole UX experience, the industrial design. And then it comes along with it. So it's complicated, but you really have to be diligent about who you're going after. That's the number one rule when you start this stuff.
Well, another major consideration in product development here in this industry, is the regulatory environment, and there aren't a ton of regulations around this industry. In fact, I was on a recent episode. I was talking with another guest about exactly that, about the regulatory environment. I was talking with Mike Tuig, and we were talking about how regulations can be very different from one state to the next, and in terms of just the verbiage I'm allowed to use and all that. And the regulations when it comes to this type of equipment, from a service provider perspective, like me, I don't worry about the FCC because that's your job. You worry about the FCC and such. I'm worried about, in the state of California, how am I allowed to use this piece of equipment or that piece of equipment? What am I allowed to try to look for? What verbiage am I allowed to use when I'm describing what I've found and things like that. But from a regulatory standpoint, what are the considerations for the product development that you are involved with at GSSI that really keep you up at night?
Yeah, well, it's you named the three-letter word. The FCC is the regulatory agency we spend the most time thinking about. But on a global scale, right, the FCC is one small piece of the puzzle. So when we make any product, we have to think about where are we going to sell it. If we're only selling it in the U.S., that means one thing. But you may sell it in the U.S. and outside with completely different regulatory environments, some heavily regulated, some not heavily regulated. And you have to be able to have a product that can perform in both places, because think about someone who is making something in a very unregulated environment who may turn it up to 12 every time, and you come along with the U.S. product that can only be turned up to 9 because that's what the FCC says, and you can't compete in those markets, right? So it's not just about the restrictions. It's about thinking about what overall can this thing perform in ways to be competitive in a multitude of environments? So the FCC certainly sets the rules for how much we can transmit, the kinds of things we can transmit, how often we can transmit, and it has a significant effect on the kinds of products you make, the kind of technologies you use, the decisions you're going to make about how much risk you want to take or go in different directions. It really rules. If you can't make something FCC compliant, there's just not worth making. So that is just the number one rule we have, because you can't use it, right? And none of your peers can use it, and that's a big market, and we're not just going to walk away from that market and leave it open for somebody else. So we have to follow those rules. Below that, it's like you said, it's a bit of the Wild West in some ways, right? So you do have state level restrictions in some cases, certainly California, and we have to pay attention to those things. But those things influence product development, but I wouldn't say they're primary influences. They're not primary drivers for why we're making product decisions. But I will say, when we're making a product, we have to be aware of what our users need within those regulations. So they may need to label things a certain way, color code things a certain way. And if we don't provide that, you come back to us and say, this thing, I can't do what I need in order to, I'm not in compliance. And if I'm not in compliance, then I'm not buying your product. So even though it doesn't necessarily drive, a technology choice, it may drive a user experience choice. It may change how we present information, or it may change a workflow, because we know that you as a service provider have to follow certain steps. And if you don't, you're not going to get the job. So it does certainly plays in as we're developing products. But the FCC in the end is the number one driver of kind of technology choices, for sure, in the US.
Now, I'd like to take a little bit different angle on this regulatory conversation. What role do you see manufacturers like GSSI playing in the generation or the promoting or the lobbying for regulations in the industry? For example, in the U.S., just anybody can get a ground penetrating radar antenna and get a website and get a phone number and tomorrow start scanning and offering services as a ground penetrating radar professional. Right, you can't do that with plumbing. Just about, I guess I don't know every state, but I think just about every state probably requires a license for plumbing, for electrical work, for general contracting. There's most other trades, most other parts of the AEC industry require some sort of certification or licensure. Ground penetrating radar the use of ground penetrating radar is definitely an outlier there. What role do you think manufacturers would play in that regulatory environment? And should manufacturers be playing more of a role in regulating that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's challenging. One, because there's lots of manufacturers and each of the equipment's different. And so to try to find commonality across those things, you have to come up with some sort of oversight, and you'd have to have some sort of group that did that was outside of the manufacturers, right? So you can't have GSSI or one of the other manufacturers put together a regulation that is beneficial to themselves, which doesn't allow other people to gain unless they use our equipment. I mean, that'd be great for GSSI, but that's bad for the industry. So typically other industries would need some sort of governing body that would sort of promote and own and maintain and create regulations that are influenced by manufacturers but not owned by manufacturers. So kind of, I think until that happens, and maybe it will, maybe it won't, I think it's been talked about a lot, certainly over the years, but I think until that happens, our job is to make sure that when someone buys a piece of equipment from us, they have the best training in the world, that they can get trained on a piece of equipment, and when they leave our facility or we leave their facility, we are comfortable and they're comfortable that they know how to use it, and that they're even though they need experience, they need more time, that hopefully they won't make large mistakes, and that's really, we spend an enormous amount of time giving away training for every sale that we make, because we know how important it is that someone uses the equipment correctly. We've all heard the stories of years past when people use GPR equipment and they didn't quite know how to use it, or there wasn't training offered, and mistakes were made, that's bad for the whole industry, right? That's not good for anybody. Then people start to wonder, does this stuff actually work? And then your business suffers and our business suffers, and nobody wants that. So you know, in lieu of a governing body that comes in and says, you need to do A, B, and C to be certified, our job as a company, as a manufacturer, is to make sure that we can offer the most robust, comprehensive training that we could possibly give the customer and make sure they leave feeling confident that they know how to use the system. And that's, we're certainly committed to that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very apparent in the industry that there's, you know, GSSI was always posting information about, hey, we're doing another training event here. Hey, another training event in that city. And so that's, I think that's well recognized, and props to you guys for that, for being so committed to training and to raising the bar in the industry. That's really not even raising, but that's just maintaining a bar for new entrants into the industry. They've got to be able to understand how to use the equipment, and that's as a service provider who's competing against these other people you're selling the equipment to. That's certainly a big frustration when I'm talking with a customer on the phone. He says, well, ABC company over here, they said that they can do this. And I say, well, I don't think that I know of any equipment in the industry that can do that. I think that that's a little bit of overselling. And I ask him, what kind of equipment do they have? And they said, well, they called it this. And I say, I know exactly what that equipment is. It cannot do that. This is not me not having as good equipment as them or something like that. This is simply them overselling this. And the overselling thing is really, that's one that gets under my skin a lot, because in the beginning, when I was a little more ignorant, I would oversell simply because I just didn't know any better. But what kinds of things has GSSI done to kind of help promote an accurate representation of the abilities and limitations of the equipment that you produce? Because you're the oldest commercial GPR manufacturer in the world, but so it's kind of in your best interest to sell the thing to everybody. Everybody and anybody should have a GSSI GPR antenna. But on the other hand, there's an industry health variable here that you want to make sure to maintain.
Yeah, it's you're right. Everyone in the world should have a GSSI GPR. I couldn't agree more. But it's funny. So when I first joined, I asked a couple of the sales guys that had been here a long time. I asked them exactly that question. I'm like, all right, so what happens when somebody calls up and you're on the fence? He said, we've been trained since the day I came here to tell someone this isn't going to work. So if someone wants to use a utility scan in a place that's just full of clay, it's not going to work. I'm sorry, this isn't the best fit. But hey, here's a technology that might work for you. And that is something that I felt that from the first moment I came here. Where people just really took that seriously. And I think part of that was just pride, knowing that our stuff, when we say it works. And if it doesn't work, we're willing to tell you that. And that trust that is built up with your customer and the industry over time sticks. It becomes sticky because people know if they call and you say it's going to work, it's going to work. And they don't have to worry about the fact that someone's overselling, because then we've all been in this situation. You look at something, you want to buy it, and you see the reviews. It can't be right. And I'm not talking about GPR. I'm just talking about in general, right? As a consumer, this can't be right. And do I really want to take the chance on this? It's expensive. All right, I'll do it. And then you're disappointed and you're really bummed out. And nobody wants that, right?
That's where negative reviews on Amazon come from.
For sure. Nobody wants to be part of the cycle of selling somebody something that doesn't work and you knew it. That is a recipe for destruction. Right? No, the business destruction. Talk about a Harvard Business Review. I mean, you just can't go down that path. And this has nothing to do with me. This was established long before I ever joined GSSI. But it's a real thing, and I think most of the industry, not all, but most of the industry follows that same sort of tenet. Is, you know, look, this is this is what we're going to do. If something's not going to work, we're going to tell people, because people's livelihoods depend on this. They can't go out there. They're going to look like idiots if they go out and say it's going to work and it doesn't work. And that's bad for everybody. Everyone sees what's written on the box and making promises. And so, you know, I think most companies do take that seriously. I think GSSI is certainly one of them. But you just can't survive long term in any industry, no matter what you're making. You start going down the other path. You just got to, if it's not going to work, you just tell someone it's not going to work, and then they trust you. So that's just the way it goes. They'll come back for some other time if they need something.
Right. Yeah. And developing, I mean, as a service provider, I have to do the exact same thing. I have to be able to tell them that, hey, this is not something that we can do for you. It's just not going to work. Next time you have a project that falls into this category over here, then give us a call. Keep our number for sure. But we're not going to be able to bring any value to you on this project this time. And that has done very well for me in the past. Yeah, that just transparent honesty with whoever your customer may be really pays itself forward in spades in terms of loyalty to the product, to the brand.
It goes, you know, it finds its, that kind of mindset finds its way into product development as well, because someone may come out in the industry with a new product, any industry, not just GPR, the product, and they're making claims and saying things. And then that starts a lot of conversation with customers, and conversation that customer will come to you and say, hey, can you do that? It's kind of what you said before. And no, we can't do that. And look, maybe they can do it. I don't know. That's not our business. We're just telling you we can't do that. And then there's back pressure, though, to say, wow, can somebody do this? Do we need to go figure out, like, did someone reinvent the wheel here? And it can cause a lot of disruption. And in the end, it may or may not be true. So it affects businesses in lots of ways. And certainly the kind of the how a company is perceived in the market is probably the primary way. But it can affect in secondary ways you wouldn't even expect in kind of the development process.
Hmm. I want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about the future of GPR in these industries, in science and in AEC, and possibly as a third. And let's just start there. GSSI and really like all the manufacturers, there are, for the most part, there are a lot of applications for science. There's a lot of applications for AEC. Is there somewhere that you see that GPR should be having more of a role, should be doing more, that is just not?
Yeah, so I could talk about this for a while. I think this is this question is why I actually joined GSSI. So there's all sorts of other reasons, but in the end, kind of the hook for me was talking with the team here and trying to understand where this technology was going to go, not just as a technology, but as a solution for application problems. And, you know, I hinted about this a little bit before, but the list is literally endless about the kinds of places that you can take GPR. So concrete was a great example again. Utility was a great example. Pavement is another really growing great example of how you can use it. Science, we're starting because of changes in technology and changes in processing power, we can start to do things on a device that we could never do before. And once you start to do that, you unlock applications that you just couldn't touch before, right? There are certain segments of the market, even in the professional market, that aren't GPR experts that still want to take a scan. They still want to make an image. And because of changes in computing power and technology and real R&D that's happened over the past few years, you can now use a tool to do things in ways that they can never do before. And those customers who kind of resisted previously now start to get pulled in a little bit and say, you know what? All right, I recognize what that looks like. I don't know what these little bumps are, but that image, even though you're not guaranteeing that that image is perfect, I know what that image is. And that's information that I didn't have before. And I think, you know, That's our goal. I think that's everyone in the industry's goal, is to make these things easier to interpret so that more people can use them. And that's a technology advancement, and certainly something that we're investing lots of money in and time in, certainly have over the past few years. And then not only do you then have GPR in kind of the state, kind of the traditional GPR and technology that you can bring to new applications that you never touched before, but now you've got a GPR technology that doesn't feel like GPR anymore that you can bring to even more places, into place, into people that never were going to get trained, never were going to be comfortable trying to figure out what a hyperbola was and where the center of this target was. And that's exciting. That's really, really exciting. That's the kind of stuff that raises the bar for everybody, helps the industry keep moving, and lets us sort of venture into places that were difficult to get into before for whatever reason. So the opportunities are endless. I think everyone in the industry sees it. I think we are investing heavily to try to make sure we can reach these places that we couldn't reach before. And we're starting to get some real reaction and traction, and start to get some reward for all the research. So it's a fun time. I can't be more excited. I couldn't be more excited about kind of where the industry is going, and where the technology is going, and the rate of change of how fast technology is changing to allow us to do new things that never could have been dreamt about, even 5 or 10 years ago. So. It's just an absolute thrilling time. Yeah, it's great.
So what excites you more about the future of GPR, hardware or software?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And lots of people get real loud about either one, right? So it's funny when you talk to if you were to wander on our engineering team and you ask the hardware guys, they'd say, look, if it wasn't for the hardware, none of this stuff would matter. It wouldn't matter what was on the screen. It's got to be the best hardware in the world. And you ask the software guys, and they'll say, anybody can make a GPR. It's no matter what you do with the data. It matters how you make it look and how it feels and how easy it is. And unfortunately, they're both right? So it's, both have to be good. I think we've all been victim to a piece of hardware that had horrible software, or a beautiful piece of software that just didn't work in one way or another. And it's not, there's no benefit to either. Right. When you make an instrument for somebody, it needs to have the best hardware in the world, but it has to have the best user interface for that user, right? For that kind of user. So the scientist needs very specific knobs that the concrete cutter never would even care about. So the user interfaces have to split, and you have to have the best hardware underneath for both, but that software is about application, it's about user experience, about making that person more successful in their job. And you just can't do it with one or the other, right? You can't go buy the cheapest GPR in the world, then put a nice interface on it, and then into your job realize you can only see down 4 inches, right? That's not going to do you any good, right? Even no matter how beautiful the software is. And same on the hardware side. So it's, I think everyone has a vested opinion, but on the product side, when you're making products, and you're looking at applications, and you're looking at user stories and who these people really are and how they do their job, our job is to make sure that they've got the best hardware and software to solve the specific problems that they're dealing with every day. And then you sell products. And you know what? The funny thing is, and this is what we tell our engineers, is the users have no idea whether it's the hardware or the software. They don't care. All they want is the best product. They want it to work. They want it to be reasonably priced. And they want it to do what you say it's going to do. They don't care whether it's the best hardware or software in the world. It does not matter to them in the end. It makes no difference.
Yeah, but Chris, you just told me about your team. What are you most excited about? Hardware or software? What do you think is the coolest thing that gets you out of bed in the morning? No, hey, Chris. Hey, nobody else is going to hear you. Nobody's going to watch this. It's okay. Nobody on your team is going to see it. You just tell me, I won't tell a soul.
Yeah, well, look, I try to listen to our customers, right? And our customers will tell us that there's a lot of people that make GPR now. And they'll tell you that we need to have something that's unique, something that makes our life easier. And the easiest way to do that right now is in software, right? So it's the easiest way to make a dramatic difference in somebody's workflow and the ability to make good decisions during the day is to present them user experience and software that just can't be touched anywhere else. And I think with the best hardware underneath, you can provide a software experience that really can separate you from the competition. So Is that close? Is that good?
No, which one is it? I don't know. I don't know if you, I don't know which one you said. Is it the software or is it the hardware? I don't know which one you just said. You just mentioned both.
You tell me. Which is it? You're the customer. Which is it?
Oh, that's a great turnaround. Let's see. What I get, okay. You know what excites me is the software. The software excites me because that user interface, user experience, the whole, like, you know, being able to do more stuff, that's great. That's exciting. The hardware makes my life easier because if you've ever been concrete scanning for an entire day on your knees the whole time, then you're going to, and if there's something on the handle that just like hurts your finger every time you grab it, or every time you have to push this button, you have to like really jam it down really hard. By the end of the day, your fingertip is bruised, or the thing is super heavy, or too big, or too small. Then at the end of a long day, you're going to just hate that piece of equipment. And I suppose you could say the same thing for the software. If the software is just annoying in something or another, but for me, what really I get excited about software, but the hardware is the thing that has the greatest potential to make me love or hate a piece of equipment at the end of the day. Because
so who's not answering the question now? You didn't answer it either.
I kind of got there. So what excites me is the software. The hardware has a greater potential to cause my life to be stressful, well, to affect my stress level. But the software is pretty cool stuff. I love the software. Yeah. So yeah, I guess I did the same thing. I didn't really answer the question either. That's fair.
You didn't. You accused me and you did
that's
the same thing.
That's the way I roll.
Give me the t-shirt.
So anyway, Chris, really interesting conversation. Love talking with you about the about just the product development story of GSSI. Everybody needs to be on LinkedIn following Chris Green. Chris is not only obviously a wealth of information here, he's just a really approachable, friendly guy and has always responded to messages that I sent him. My production team is going to put Chris's personal cell phone number and his home address here on the bottom of the screen. So you'll be able to, you know, get in touch with Chris with any questions you have about any stuff. Just, you know, life questions, whatever you need.
Yeah, let's see how approachable I am then. That'll be good.
So anyway, everybody reach out to or follow Chris on LinkedIn, and he's great. Obviously, geophysical.com, GSSI website, and just want to really thank you, Chris, for being on with Concrete Conversations today and making this a fun podcast. And everybody follow upon Concrete Conversations, subscribe to the channel. That will allow us to keep getting great guests like just like Chris Green on here with from GSSI. So thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Forrest. It's been fun. Let's do it again.
All righty, great. Thank you.